Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we better be good. Today we have Phil and myself, Ange, and we're going to talk about Phil's article, The Power of No. Before we dive into the main topic, though, let's ask our get-to-know-a-gnome question. Phil, what are you currently playing?
Yeah, I'm playing a couple different games. I'm running three. Now that I think about that, I'm running three and playing one. So I am running biweekly. I'm running Blades in the Dark with my local group, which I absolutely love. Both my local group and Blades in the Dark.
Yeah, I need to get my hands on Blades in the Dark because it sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It has its own mechanics, but it tracks really close to Powered by the Apocalypse, so it really wasn't hard for me to pick up, but it is, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's, you know, basically fantasy criminals and doing all kinds of crime stuff, so I'm really digging running it. I am also running a campaign playtest of my latest game in development, Hydra Hacker Operatives.
Ooh.
So that's just getting started. Like, we've done all the session zero stuff. I have characters and I'm kind of like ready to start playtesting it. And I've playtested the one shot version of it, which is the actual Hydro Hack. I've done that a bunch of times, but I've never actually played out the campaign portion, like what you just do like week to week in between hacks and stuff. So that's getting underway now. That's actually a lot of fun. And then I am also, every other Sunday, I run Swords Without Master for Chris and a few others. And Chris and Bob, because, you know, if you know the Gnome Stew, you know Chris and Bob. And a few others. And I actually do that out in public. Like, we actually play that at a Panera in town. Like, we just go sit in the corner and just, you know, get on with our game.
That's really cool.
And then lastly, I'm playing a game that you're also playing. Chris is running Masks, so I am in that Masks game.
That's really cool.
Say, Angela, what are you playing?
Well, right now I am running weekly afternoon game of Uncharted Worlds.
Oh yeah.
With some folks I've met through various means playing online games, where none of us are in the same parts of the world. I think one of the guys is in Los Angeles, one is in Poland, and one is in Sweden. So that's been an interesting experience.
That's some interesting time zones.
Luckily, the Google scheduling thing just adjusts for your time zone, so that makes it a little easier. I'm running about a once a month or so Masks game for my friends' kids and their friends. That's been an interesting experience because they're all new role players, and it's fun to see them fall into some of the old mistakes that we used to make back in the day, or the things that sidetrack them. They very clearly, last night I ran this, and they very clearly decided not to go after the bad guy right away because it was Taco Tuesday and they didn't want their tacos to get cold.
Nice. That's awesome.
And then my regular group, we're just getting back into our 5th edition D&D game, which is a campaign that we've been playing for... we've played it twice before. We've had two runs of it before. And it has everyone really invested in their characters, and we're all very excited to get back to it. In fact, one of the guys ended up picking up a 3D printer, and he printed us all medallions of the logo for our character's guild.
Oh, that is awesome.
Yeah, really, really cool stuff. So we're all very into those characters in that game. So, moving on, you recently posted an article called The Power of No. Can you give us a summary of what you talk about in that article?
Yeah, The Power of No, it comes out of many, many dead campaigns that I have run. And it's the idea that all too often we mistake the idea of saying yes, that as GMs that we should, you know, say yes and to everything. And the truth is we should say yes and as much as possible when we're in play, when we're improvising in play. But outside of play, a lot of times we should say no as GMs, because some of the things that come up, some of the things that we're asked to say yes or no to, can wind up destabilizing the game or making it unsafe for somebody, or just basically sucking the fun out of it for other people. And so that sometimes as a GM, we have to not be afraid to just say no.
I was really, you know, when I read your article, I'm like, yes, this. You know, I'm not saying no to this, I'm saying yes to this. Because I think many GMs go through a kind of a transition period where they, you know, they say no to everything, and then they realize the power of saying yes, but then they go too far overboard and get to the point where they don't want to say no. What are some examples of times you've run into things where saying yes ended up being the wrong answer?
So I've told this story in a few different places, but I killed a campaign once. A campaign I actually really liked. I was playing Witchcraft. I don't know if you've ever played it. It's a great game. It's a fantastic game by Eden Studios. And one of the players just wasn't digging the base classes in the book and asked me if they could use one of the classes from a supplement. And it was a vampire. And I was like, yeah, I guess that sounds all right. You know, it was in a supplement that was made by the same company. I guess it should be fine. And it totally wasn't. The class was like way overpowered compared to the other players. And really quickly, it became not a lot of fun for me, because this character could basically wade through everything, and not a lot of fun for the other players, because there wasn't much for them to do while the vampire was just literally ripping everything to shreds. And ultimately, it just, that campaign really just didn't have enough legs. It was too early in the campaign, and it never got off the ground. It just kind of destabilized, and we wound up playing something else. And I, you know, could have, you know, going back to that moment, I could have either looked at the vampire and been like, no, I really want you just to pick something from the main book, or, you know, I could have tried to come up with something else. But just by just giving in and saying yes, and it really was giving in, because I had looked at the vampire and was like, oh, I don't know, this thing looks kind of, you know, it had a lot of options, and there seemed to be some really crazy power things it could do, and my GM instinct was like, this is not a good idea. And I quashed it and was like, no, this player wants to have fun, and I want them to have fun, which ultimately isn't a bad thing. But I wound up saying yes to that instead of really thinking at the larger picture of, like, is this going to work for a long-term game?
Yeah, it's one of those tough spots to be in, because, you know, when the player's choosing character they're going to play, that's their moment of investment. That's their initial investment into the campaign or the game itself. And telling them no has that chance of killing some of that spark. So it's tough to find that balance between saving the integrity of the rest of the game, but letting the player have something that they really want to play. What are some of the tips you have for, you know, avoiding getting into those situations? You know, like finding a balance between getting that player invested in the character and not playing something that's going to be counterproductive to the rest of the game.
I mean, I think you can come at it from a couple of angles. So first, from the campaign angle, I think that you can start by, like, when you're doing campaign formation, you can start by deciding, are you going to do supplements, you know, for character? Like, are you going to allow characters from supplements or not? Like, you can just have that discussion right up front and just be like, we're going to play this game, but we're going to play a core book only. You know, like that. And I mean, that applies to like your Pathfinder game or D&D game. And you can start with that, because that will then help rein in some things. But then I think with the individual player, the question really has to become, like, you say no, and no is good. But then you really need to do something. Like you said, you need to do something with that player to find that investment. And so, you know, that's then sitting and having that conversation, saying like, well, okay, what was it about this character class that you really liked? Or what is it about the ones in the core book that are kind of turning you off? And kind of working with them to figure out, is there something that works in the core book, but they just didn't know about it? Or, you know, or is there another supplement that you are comfortable with? That, oh yeah, well, while this one's really overpowered, you can get kind of the same thing, but in a more nuanced way using this class. Or, hey, you just use the core book, but pick this power instead of this power, and you're going to get very much the same experience. So I think it's that. It's working with the player to understand what's making it exciting for them. What's that vision of their character in their head that they're trying to achieve on paper?
And I think it's okay to also admit that not every player out there is going to be altruistic for the health of the game. You know, I've played with people before who they must make their character into a super special snowflake, or they're constantly trying to pull the spotlight onto themselves and not necessarily being good at passing that around to other players at the table. And it's good to be able to know how to say no to them while keeping the rest of the game going. Because they may not be a bad player, but they may have tendencies that can get out of control if you're not careful.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, I've seen both, right? I've seen players who just didn't realize they were doing it, and then, you know, with just a little bit of correction and kind of modeling good play, they pick it up. And I've had problem players in the past where, you know, it hasn't worked out because their style of play just totally doesn't jive with how I like to run a table.
Yeah, and unfortunately, if you're running a one-shot or a con game, it's like you can't necessarily, you've got that player for those 4 hours. So it's the, you have to, you know, unless they're being truly bad and breaking safety at the table or just being completely rude, you know, you can't just throw them out of the game because they're not fitting in with things. You gotta kind of adjust. Have you ever run into anybody like that you've had to kind of adjust on the fly at a one shot that you can't quite avoid them?
Yeah, I've actually been a player in it and I've been a GM for it. And yeah, it's really, it's tough because a player that kind of gets a little out of control can really suck the fun out of the rest of the table. And so often what's good for that is to give them a solo quest. Come up with something that, like, oh, you should totally go by yourself over here, and I won't punish you for it. Like, I won't, you know, then gang up on you and kill you. But if I let you go off and do this kind of solo thing, like, oh, you know, you need to sabotage the generator while the rest of the, you know, group goes and finds, you know, the secret plans, then that's great, because then they'll go off and have like their little solo thing, and they'll just not collide with the rest of the players. And ultimately they'll have a good time, and the other players will have a good time because you've basically narratively separated them out, right?
Yeah, it gives them their chance to shine in the spotlight, and then lets everyone else do their thing without that person getting in the way.
Yeah, and I mean, if you have somebody like that in a campaign situation, I mean, then that's when you want to try to and it's not something you can fix. Like, let's say you just have a friend and they're always like that, and you're not going to kick them out of your game, and you're just going to play with them. And then you give them like the Wolverine role, right? Like, you just always like let them, like, you know, you go do this thing, and it'll work. Like, you can make that work.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough, but it's you know, if you learn how to manage that player, you know, I luckily don't have anyone like that in my regular group, but I have like last night running for the kids, a couple of them would just get finished with what they were doing, and I would start moving on to another one of the players, and they'd be like, oh, I want to do this. I want to do this next. Can I do that? And I'm like, hang on.
Right.
You just did your thing. You know, I'm going to move on to the next person. It takes a little, especially with the younger players, it takes a little bit of training to get to that point of knowing they have to wait to let somebody else do their thing too.
Yeah, I do that. I do that a lot when I start, because I'll start aggressively scene cutting and stuff. And so I will tell a player like that. I'll say, yes, you absolutely can do that. And I'm going to come back to you in just a second. We're going to go over here and see what's happening. And then, you know, just hard shift over. And sometimes if you just tell them that, like, yes, then they'll be like, okay, I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait. My turn's coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also wanted to touch on, you know, I briefly mentioned it before. You mentioned it before. Safety issues. That's, I think, an important area to know when to say no. because I think some players don't necessarily always understand when they might be stepping on other people's safety areas.
Yeah, safety's tricky. Like, there are obvious safety issues, and then there are sometimes more subtle and nuanced ones, and it is hard, especially, it's harder if you're playing in one shot and you don't actually know everyone at the table, because it's hard to get a read. It's hard when you are virtual and not physical, because you're losing a certain amount of body language that you can't get. And so this can sometimes be really tricky. But what I said in the article was that basically sometimes you say no for the betterment of the entire group. But with safety, it's the exact opposite. With safety, you say no for the individual. So if one person is uncomfortable with something that's happening in the game, then that's enough to say no. Because you don't want to have somebody ride out. Like, you know, the classic one is like, let's say it's an interrogation scene and somebody like starts to ratchet up the torture descriptions.
Yeah.
And if the rest of the party's like, yeah, yeah, that's cool. Like, you know, get that orc to talk kind of thing. And one person's like, yeah, I'm really not comfortable with this. That's all that's needed. Like, that's your no, and that's enough to stop. And those, like, that's the obvious case. The harder ones then become when they're more nuanced and they really have something to do with the person's background. And not everybody may understand what that is.
Yeah. I've had friends who hit safety issues. Like, one had just recently gone through a divorce. And she was playing a horror game, and there were shades of domestic abuse in the horror game, and she realized in the middle of play that was really hitting some nerves for her. So she had to quietly ask the GM if they could start toning some of that down and move into other areas of the game. It's tough areas to hit.
Yeah, and that's why I'm a fan of something like the X card. And the X card is probably the most common. There are some other ones that people use, but just any kind of tool that you can put on the table that you can indicate to the group that you're uncomfortable about something without necessarily having to make the game come to a complete halt. Like, often with the X card, one can touch it and you can just edit out the current scene. And sometimes that's all you need. Like, sometimes you just need to steer away from that edge. Like, for instance, the interrogation thing. If somebody touches the X card, it's like, okay, well, the interrogation's over, and here's what you find.
Yeah, it's do the quick, you know, the quick and hard fade to black.
Exactly.
You know, yep, that thing happened, but it happened off screen. We're not going to touch it again. Just going to take the information you got from it and move on.
Right. Now, something like that horror game, there's probably a moment where the game needs to pause. The player needs to tell the GM, because the GM's not necessarily going to know that maybe, you know, like, that's the tone that they need to stay, you know, they need to steer from. And so, if possible, and the player's comfortable enough, being able to have that conversation with the GM to the side, and that's often a good time to be like, okay, everyone, let's take five.
Yeah.
And then that give that player that one-on-one opportunity. And then, yeah, you can make those adjustments.
And I think, is a GM, if you're running a one-shot and you don't know your players, but you can still see the body language at the table, and you see somebody who looks like they're not having, you know, like they're not having fun anymore, it's good to, like, you know, let's quickly get rid of that, you know, let's move past that scene and then quietly pull that person aside and be like, hey, that okay? Should we move on? You know, are you okay with this? I wouldn't necessarily put them on the spot in front of everybody, but at least giving them a moment to express if that was a problem.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, especially when you're playing like horror games, you can put that up front on the table. If it's not going to completely unravel your mystery, you can be like, hey, you know, we're going to play this game tonight, and there's some tones about domestic abuse in the course of this game.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone have a problem with that? And then from there, you can have that initial discussion that says, all right, well, we'll just have very broad strokes on that. We're not going to, you know, we won't get into any details, you know, like, yeah, come up with that spot where somebody's like, yeah, I'm uncomfortable about it in general, but, you know, if it's mentioned, it's not a problem. It's just, you know, I don't want to talk about anything in any kind of detail.
Yeah, especially for a horror game where you know you're going to be hitting subjects that are supposed to unnerve people, that are supposed to go to those dark places.
Exactly. if your fantasy game goes there, like that can come out of the blue, and you know, you're going to have to deal with that safety issue as it arises. But yeah, like you said, with a horror game, I mean, you kind of know there's a chance that you're going to make somebody uncomfortable. It doesn't hurt if you can kind of ask people in advance.
Well, I think we've hit all the major topics on your article. Is there anything else you wanna touch on that we haven't hit so far?
No, I think I'll just say in summary that don't be afraid of no. I mean, be kind about it. Don't be authoritarian about using no, because I think that's if you're a gamer, I think of probably the same generation as Ange and I are. We totally went through GMs who got kind of drunk on using the word no.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, if you're going to use no, use it kindly. Use it when it's important, but always try to work for, a solution.
That sounds good. So, let's give a little bit of special thanks to our Patreon backers, like the awesome GNOME supporters like Stephen Farrell, the mad wizard Sean Merwin, and the ever-lovely Kevin Lovecraft. Thanks to their help and others like them, this show is funded by the GNOME Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the GNOME Stew website to the GNOME Stew Patreon. This ad brought to you by Grumpy Cat, the Queen of No. You thought I was going to say Patreon, didn't you? You can find us both at GnomeStew.com, at GnomeStew on Twitter, and GnomeStew on Facebook. But where else can we find you on the internet, Phil?
You can find me in a couple places. You can find me primarily on Twitter at DNAPhil. You can find me every Tuesday night live on the Misdirected Mark podcast.
With the awesome Chat Room for Life.
In the awesome Chat Room for Life. You can find that on Twitch. Or you can just find the Misdirected Mark podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And you can keep up with the games that I am working on and making at Encoded Designs.
Excellent.
Ange, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at OriKes13, O-R-I-K-E-S-13, and pretty much on the Google Plus, often hanging out in the same areas that you can find the Misdirected Mark stuff. Otherwise than that, GNOME Stew's the best place. So, Phil, do you think we avoided the stew this week?
I hope so. I'm trying to keep my unbroken record of being chopped up and used as ingredients.